Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase of wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. Paul, is it appropriate to call out your co-hosts when they come running in after the show starts?
Never.
When I was fortunate to be an entertainment publicist, we go down and watch the evening news. They're screaming and running around 10 seconds before the red light goes on. And then they all sit there calmly like they've been waiting for 20 minutes. So that's what Letitia's...
That's what she's doing.
That's what she's doing. She's very well versed at this, yes.
Well, I have two young children. I am perfect at making everything happen and being calm.
All right. Speaking of trying to be calm, we are approaching the end of the year, and many people that we know, our clients included, are always interested in, hey, what can we do to reduce our taxes?
Yay.
So for that, we have come up with a list of items that we think are interesting and extremely useful. It's not going to be appropriate for everyone, but in the right case, the right time, I think it really is.
So is this the ABCs of year-end tax planning? Because I see lots of letters here attached to all these things. It looks like an alphabet soup of plans and ideas here.
Yeah, I was going to say more of an alphabet soup than the ABCs, but there's a lot of letters here. So let's start with one that, Paul, you don't even have, because we just added this since we prepped for the show, and it's a QOZ.
Oh, I got three of those.
So funny. You're going to start with a QOZ.
I'm starting there.
We were going to do a whole show dedicated to QOZ.
Yeah, so let's tell everybody what a QOZ is.
Let me quiz you. What is a QOZ?
Quick, Google.
All right, so a QOZ is a qualified opportunity zone, Paul. And we're in the process of scheduling an expert to come in on this topic, because it is pretty complicated. But we're going to cover just a few seconds of how powerful that it is, and then let everyone know that we're going to have a great show on it, probably in about 2 or 3 weeks, actually.
And it's funny that you say that. It's weird how things run in patterns here. But just this morning, we do a show on investment, Accelerate OC, and they're opening up their accelerator, the guy who hosts that show, Kerry Ransom, in a QOC, in an investment zone.
So Paul knows what a QOZ is.
I
want to know what he doesn't know. I'm telling you, I'm never surprised.
Yeah, see?
So I have to tell you, I was going to save this for later, but I spoke to an old friend that I hadn't talked to in years. As a matter of fact, he used to work with me 10 years ago. I know we haven't spoken, but I've been listening to your show. I've listened to about half of them. I'm like, oh, great. I'm like, and then it was silent. So I was afraid to ask. I'm like, so,
do you
any, I don't know, comments, feedback? He goes, it's really good. Now let me talk to you about Paul.
Exactly. Always falling.
People love you, Paul.
It was all good. It was all good. So anyway, so qualified opportunity zone, that came out in the 2017 tax laws. And while it didn't make the highlights, I think how most laws kind of get into place, there's always the mainliner laws, and then there's always these small ones that kind of just fall in under the radar.
The little riders that they throw in at the last minute here. Right.
So I think this was one of the riders, and it was actually a brainchild of one of the founding partners of Facebook, who then went on to start Napster, whose name, of course, I can't remember, but he is a young tech executive. You probably know Paul.
Not the twins, the Winkle Bus brothers.
Nope. No. The Napster guy, somebody.
You know, we'd
somebody
had,
tweet us.
I think we had him. I'm embarrassed because we had one of the Napster guys in here a couple of years ago talking about that story, and I've forgotten his name. I'll look it up for you.
All right. So in any event, he was part of the development of this. But here's how it works. So it is based off of real estate is developed on what has been deemed as opportunity zone. The governors of all 50 states were given some parameters and then a go-ahead to say, hey, we need so many opportunity zones based on the size of your state, et cetera. And one of the parameters is, and I'm going to really simplify here, when I bring Nick in a few weeks, we'll talk in more detail. But if the
corporation or partnership. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll let you do that. But what? Thanks for throwing me off. So if the average income is less than 80% of the median income in that particular area, that is something that might be deemed an opportunity zone. So this is not and I'm lacking for better terms, but this is not a poverty-stricken area. These are just areas that might be slightly behind their development. So they're looking to have some incentive to motivate these areas to get them more developed. And by the way, this is based off the 2010 census. So a lot of the areas, like the one in particular that Letitia and I are looking into for our clients, right now, if it was to be qualified as Opportunity Zone, may or may not, because it was based off of 2010 and these areas are already well much developed, but that's the way the laws are based. So with that as a very, very vague background, the parameters of the tax benefits are, if someone had a someone had a capital gain on the sale of, in this case, it's anything. It's not just real estate. It could be real estate, stocks, a business, which in essence is stock, private or public. You can take not all of the, you can take all of your capital gains, but what makes this unique is you can take a portion. It doesn't require that you take all of your capital gains. You can invest those funds into an opportunity zone investment. And with that, you can defer your federal capital gains if you do it in 2019 for 7 years. So in 2026, you would then be responsible for paying your federal capital gains, however, at a 15% discount. Oh, by the way, Sean Parker, that's the Napster name.
Just comes to.
Yeah, those kind of things happen. So a 15% discount. So think about it. And for those of you who are doing retirement plans who know or familiar with and or like the concept of deferred taxation, you're deferring, in this case, your capital gains for 7 years. You're able to make money on the money that you would have paid the government. So you now have 7 years to earn money on top of the money that, that you would have already paid. And then when that day comes, you pay 15% less. That's a good win.
And how do you find these zones?
You speak to your professional advisor.
He's got the secret list, right?
There are people who are trying to develop themselves. We have learned, Letitia and I, that it's extremely complicated when you dig into see how the watch is made. But for those who are professionals, and we use a couple of companies that we really, really like, one which we'll bring in a couple of weeks. But I'm not actually done. So you have the 7 years. The government requires that it's a 10-year investment because you're invested into the properties that are on this zone. At the end of 10 years, let me know if you know what this term means. There is a step up in basis on the investment that you've made so that when you sell, you pay no taxes. It's very similar to what happens when someone dies and passes their property to their beneficiaries.
Right.
Well, so in 2026.
Somebody buys, I buy a house at today's value. I hold it for 20 years, pass it on to my kids. They're paying tax on the new in value of that house when they inherit it, right? The step up in their base.
Correct.
Of that. So they don't pay that capital gain that I accrued in 20 years. It's when they start, when they take over.
Correct. So it's that same concept, and it's now utilized in this. So bottom line, and then we're going to move on, but a deferred federal capital gain tax, 15% discount, and then 3 years after that, in 2029, the sale of the property can happen, and you pay no tax on any growth from your original investment.
And somebody tweeted, so is it just an investment in physical property within that space, an office building or a center? Or is it a business within that space, or both?
All of the above.
Yeah, I think it's all of the above.
So
it has to do with the opportunity zone and with the zone. It's actually designated
a map,
zone. It's a map of an area of the land, and so within that zone, there are certain rules associated with the investments.
And what we've learned is, in particular with the one that we're using with our clients, is there's a line to what Letitia said. On the other side of the line, on the other side of, you know, in the old days, the railroad tracks,
yeah, right.
They do not qualify, and on this side that they do. So pretty interesting and very, very, very powerful.
And yet I find, this guy was talking about, a couple other people have talked about it, very few people, including me, really understand where or how these things, we've heard of them and sort of a buzz about them, but I don't know many people other than you guys that are, or are the show hosts this morning that are taking advantage of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's So I will tell you that to that, Letitia and I have been familiar with this since 2017 and have seen many, many operators come to us with their interpretation and their execution of the
investment opportunities.
Yeah, and we haven't liked them. This, the one we have just seen recently, we really like. Because at the end, and then I will close on this subject because it is much more complicated, one should never make an investment just based on tax purposes alone. The investment has to be sound and solid. And this is the one we found is the first one we think that is sound and solid, and it's going to produce quite nicely with or without the tax benefit. The tax benefit is just a wonderful add-on. Okay, moving on. So the alphabet soup, to continue, I'm going to throw up three sets of three letters, and then we'll break them down. So there's DAF, which is one, CRT, which is two, and CLT, which is three.
And there's DUM, which is me, about all of them here.
So let's break it down. The first one is called a DAF, or Donor Advised Fund. So most people know that they can make a contribution of cash and or stock or of anything and get a tax deduction the year that they make that contribution. A cash contribution is a higher normally deduction than if you were to give a stock and or property, but that's the definition. So a donor advised fund is a fund that one would set up normally with their advisor and make their charitable contributions to said donor advised fund. It's a charitable investment account. And that is deemed a gift that particular year. But one of the beauties of that is the grantor of that gift has the rest of their life, the rest of their spouse's life. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that we do in our legacy planning, the rest of their children's life to actually pay any other organization other than the gift fund. In other words, they have their lifetime and their kids' lifetime to have a legacy to pay the different charities of their choice. But the beauty of this is especially for those who have had a windfall year, whether it was a sale of a company, sale of a property, and stock option, so they had a significantly high year, they might say, okay, here's an example that Letitia and I use. So we have a client that says, hey, I know that over my lifetime, we'll pay $100,000 in charitable contributions. Let's say, I don't know, it's $10,000, you know, $5,000 a year for the next 20 years. But their income after this year is going to be significantly less, you know, a very low tax bracket.
Let's use an example. So for example, let's just use me. Pretend I'm give me a job that one year I'm going to have a big pop.
So you're
a show producer for OC Talk Radio.
Great. So I'm a show producer for OC Talk Radio. And for some reason this year I make $1 million. And I'm going to have...
Good job, Paul.
Which is the average
great job.
Pay here.
Yeah, right. And this year, I'm going to have a big tax burden. And so if there's a way that I want to, like Bart's saying, reduce some of my taxes and implement this tool, tell me why a donor advised fund is beneficial to me in that year.
So you... And if we use my example that I started, so it's $100,000. Let's say you and your husband say, hey, and we know we're going to get $5,000 a year for the next 20 years.
To this charity, because I want to give to this charity no matter what.
Any charity.
Right.
Can be anyone. You can split it up. So you decide, and you also realize that, hey, the likelihood of me making another $1 million in a single year is not impossible, but maybe not likely.
Yeah.
It's just an example.
Right.
So let's get the biggest tax deduction we can this year. So let's get a $100,000 tax deduction by putting $100,000 into the donor advised fund. And then you and your husband would have the rest of your lives to decide who and when to give to pay out the funds to the charities.
I like that.
It's a great, great choice. And you and I have used it numerous times.
But once you put the money in, it's gone. I mean, you can't reclaim it or reuse it or say, oh, I need it back now here for something.
Now, that's an interesting point. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well, yes, it is gone out of your estate, but you're still managing it and being able to give away the funds each year when you want to actually give the money away. So you're still kind of overseeing it, but technically it's out of your estate. It's no longer your personal money. You can just give it away as you want to give it away.
But could I invest it in something in the hope of seeing it grow? Not for me to get the return, but to build that $100,000 into $1 million?
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually what most of our clients are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And to the degree they don't want to gift for the first couple of years, it gives us more of an opportunity to grow it and make it larger. And then
they can make more of an impact.
Yeah. You like that one, Paul?
Good question.
I like that, yeah. So you can take advantage. You know you're going to do this over a period of time. Do it now when it'll give you the biggest tax break.
Gives you a big tax break.
And then you'll get a big lump, a seed that you can start to grow.
Correct.
To make even more impact, as you said. Give me more money.
And we talk to clients about this all the time as far as legacy planning. So say this is part, they want to create a legacy anyway, they can have as part of their legacy and then give to the organizations that they want to give to, and they have control of the money in the meantime and being able to provide the money over, like you said, over a period of years or all at once, whatever you guys want to do.
Is there a minimum required? I mean, I can't give $1,000 and set up one of these things, I suppose, or...
Either 1,000 or 5,000.
Yeah, it's a really small. I believe it's 5,000.
Depends on the who the we have a couple of to use. So
depends
it's
one
or five.
Who sets it up.
Okay. So it might be something even us ordinary mere mortals could use.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then actually, just to kind of close up on that, because this is relevant for the other two as well. And while we're not, just make sure that this is not tax advice per se, and talk to your CPA or tax preparer, but technically you can get a deduction up to 50% of your adjusted gross income. So let's say this year, Letitia, instead of $1 million, we're going to make it easy. Let's say she made $200,000 that year of her big year.
Yeah.
So that $100,000, that would be the limit that she could put in as a charitable deduction. And then let's say because of that $200,000 income, she was in a 50% tax bracket. So while it feels like you're losing $100,000, you're really... 50 of that would have gone to taxes. So you've saved 50,000 in taxes. So your net difference in cash flow is 50,000 by putting 100,000 into the
And you got $100,000 to donate sometime, whereas if you just paid the tax and put 50 aside, you would have given 50 to Uncle Sam and 50 into the thing here. You're taking Uncle Sam's money and you're
exactly
giving it to somebody else.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And then a couple other key points in Bart's looking at the time. Do I have a moment?
You go. Yeah.
So also one thing I really like about the donor advised fund is it's simple record keeping. So there's a lot of tools you can implement out there, but depending on the tool you use, it could potentially be really simple record keeping. And it's a way that you can support legacy planning. So say you have a family meeting, you're like, I'm not really sure how I want to disperse money or give it away to charity. You already kind of can set it up. And if I wanted, you can personalize the account and say, for example, I can say the Burbaum family trust, or not trust, but fund. And then that way I can name it and then people know the charity's coming from the Burbaum family fund going forward.
Right.
And then like the last part is, like we said before, your financial advisor, wealth manager can help you manage that money for the long term to be able to provide the biggest contribution to your charities over time or come up with a strategic plan.
Next one.
All right. So next one, CRT, Charitable Remainder Trust. And there's a lot of similarities between the next two, so I'll try to differentiate between the two. So CRT, best used also when someone has something that they are going to sell with a large capital gain, but they utilize it before they sell, so before the income has actually happened. Because if you, in one case might be, again, so stock.
Or stock or house.
So stock or house, the property needs to be transferred into this trust. So unlike the donor advised fund, one needs to go see an attorney and have a trust drafted. You transfer the ownership to the trust, and then you sell the property. And Paul, here's where it's super, super effective. You sell the property, paid no taxes at all. So zero taxes.
Wow. Because it's in the trust now.
Because it's in the trust, and it's a charitable trust. And by definition of a charitable trust, they pay no taxes.
So I bought the stock, the house, the Ferrari, the rare wine, the something here, and then I choose to put it into a charitable trust. And when it does get sold, those proceeds are not taxed.
Correct.
That's amazing.
But let's play the other side. You no longer own it.
Yeah.
The trust owns it, which means a charity owns it.
So it's not revocable. You can't take it back and say, oh, it's mine again here.
Good words. Correct. Exactly right. It's not revocable. Now, difference between the charitable lead trust that we'll close with, the charitable remainder trust, the remainder portion, that would be the interest or dividends, and it's calculated by the attorney and your advisor and your CPA. That gets paid to the donor for the rest of their life, for the rest of their and their spouse's lives. So let's say...
Paul, you're giving away your Ferrari.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
So you're giving away you're giving away your rare Ferrari, and you sold it for $1 million. You paid no taxes.
Right.
So it's now sitting in the account. So let's say you say, hey, Letitia, help me out. And I want, and because it's already in a charitable account, you know what? Be as aggressive as you want, but be safe but aggressive. So let's just say...
With your investments.
Yeah. Can I say, you want to say 10 or is that too high?
Too high.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go 5. I'm going to air back on conservative. So 5% per year.
Yeah.
So for the rest of your life, Paul, you're going to get $50,000 a year. Now, it's 5% based off of the principal. So if the principal goes below $1 million, you get less. If principal goes above $1 million, you get more.
So I donate the Ferrari. We sell the Ferrari, no taxes.
And it's $1 million.
And it's $1 million sitting, and the interest on that money comes back to me.
Correct.
Wow.
The gain, or it's not the interest. We set up in the trust what percentage you're going to be receiving. And then that's the bar that your advisor needs to meet to make sure you get it. The higher the...
You call it the terms.
Yeah, the higher the interest, the lower the deduction, the lower the interest you get. The less you get, the bigger deduction you get. This isn't a dollar for dollar. If you do $1 million, I used 100,000. If you do 100,000 in the donor advised fund, you get 100,000 deduction. If you do 100,000 worth of value of the CRT, you don't get 100,000. You get something less, and it depends on one's age, interest, or the payout rate assumed, etc. And that's why it gets a little more complicated.
And there's all sorts of formulas. So it depends on what your specific need is. This is what Bart's saying is very generic information. Like, this is the tools and how the tools work. But your situation might be different, Paul. Say you're like, I don't ever want... It's a term, it's a time frame, it's an amount, it's a percentage. There's a lot of formulas. You would work with your CPA, your estate attorney, and your wealth advisor to kind of put together this for you. So it's a collaborative event to be able to make sure that you're properly setting everything up in the very beginning.
So if I really have the money, it pays to plan out how I'm going to give it away to charity. Don't just write a big check.
Absolutely.
And put my name on a building and say, I'm done with it here.
Be strategic.
That's the biggest takeaway of this whole thing. Another comment on that is, I see we're really running out of time. So, Paul, if let's say you got your Ferrari, I'm going to be really obscene and say it didn't cost you anything. So your $1 million Ferrari.
You guys are going to give me one, you said, right, someday.
That's right. So if you would have sold it, you would have paid taxes on $1 million, right? Because we're assuming you had zero basis.
Right.
So you sell it without using a trust, and you get, after taxes, it's worth $500,000. So you're making... 5%, we're using the same number, off of $500,000, you get $25,000 a year. If, on the other hand, but you always have the $500,000.
Right.
The comparison would be, okay, we sell it for $1 million, now you've got $1 million paying you for many, many years, so you're getting $50,000 a year. And there's a break even in the curve. If you're most motivated to do this by, hey, what's best for me from a cash flow and overall financial benefit?
Right.
There is a line that if you live long enough that you would benefit more by, even though you're giving away the principal.
And it sounds kind of weird to say, I'm going to give something away, but I still want something back. But at the same time, why not? Take it. Maybe that's you, or maybe you just want to give it away. It's all theirs, and you're just going to try and make it as big a pile of money as you can. But there's choices.
There's choices. All of these, I think, are best driven by those who have charitable intent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There's a lot of great tax benefits, but if there's no charitable intent, Tish and I usually say, well, it's probably not your best choice, although they're loaded with tax benefits. And then the last one, the charitable lead trust, all of the same benefits that we talked about with the charitable remainder trust. However, it's reversed. So for a term of time, could be 10, 15, 20 years, the charity receives the interest. And then at the end of the term, let's say 15, we've been using that a lot lately, at the end of 15 years, the donor gets his or her principal back.
I like that one. Mm-hmm. So go. I don't need the money. You go use it and benefit from it, and then at some point in time, I take it back.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that one.
And that's I'll tell you, here's a little secret sauce planning idea that Letitia and I use, is we'll have a client, they already have a donor advised fund, or we set one up for them. they'll do the Charitable Lee Trust, or CLT. The charity that's receiving their interest for 15 years is their donor-advised fund, of which they have complete control of where and when the money's going. Remember, it's already a gift. We're not trying to fool the system or cheat the system. It's gifted.
To an account that's already maybe in their family name.
But it's how much control you have over it after you gift it, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. And kind of closing on that, what we've just realized really just in the last year or two doing more of these, while we thought it would be great for the, call it the parents, some of our parents are like, hey, this is great, but I would love for this fund to keep giving and have our kids connected to the same legacy that we're interested in, so that the kids will be able to do it, and it'll be a nice legacy for the parents.
The Rockefeller Foundation, rather than the what's the family? The Vanderbilts never did anything. They blew all the money, and there is no Vanderbilt fortune left.
This is absolutely a technique to be able to preserve wealth for multiple generations.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And be tax efficient.
Right. So,
you make it sound so easy. How do they find you? How do they call you? Come on, this is cool.
Because you have a team. It's easy when you have a team. We do all the work for you. We do the heavy lifting.
So my friend who I talked to, he also said, Bart, you were really slow in the beginning shows. I wasn't sure if you were going to make it. I'm like, thanks a lot. I call him Paco. So Paco, if you're listening, this one's for you. But he says, now you've gotten really good. But he said, at the end, you don't do a good job. You always defer to Letitia or someone on how to find the show. I'm like,
need a big close, big
finish. So here it is. I'm closing today.
Good.
And you can find these episodes or this episode, one, by going to our Instagram, either Letitia's or mine. Mine is Bart Zandbergen. At Instagram.
Now I see why you don't close. You don't know the closing pitch. I'm going to do the close, but so I don't know.
At Bart Zandbergen. Okay. Yeah, at Bart Zandbergen. Yes. And then on the tag, there's a tagline that says "latest episode."
Yes.
That's the easiest way to find it. Or we can find it at Letitia Burbaum.
Oh, you're deferring to her again.
No, he's just using mine at Instagram. Yeah.
So go ahead and clean up my mess.
Oh my goodness, you're so funny. Okay, so our firm is Optivest Wealth Management. So you can always find us online by going there. If you want to find the shows direct, you can find us on Podbeam, which is connected to all of our social media. That's Facebook, that's Instagram, that's LinkedIn. You got it. You have access to all of them there. We are on iTunes, iHeartRadio. And what you're going to look for is Zandbergen Report, Wealth Strategies, and Investment Wisdom. So if you're watching us right now on the video, you can see it as a really cool Z. It was square around it, and it says Bart's last name, Zandbergen Report. So if you search that, or you just go to Google, go Zandbergen Report, you will find it. It'll be the first hit. So
this is
the worst
close we've ever had.
Do you see why I don't close, Paul?
All right.
Thanks, everyone who's tuned in. We'll see you in studio next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest Inc. and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest Inc. under SEC registration.